From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Tuesday, February 4th. I'm Abby Larico. False confessions to crimes aren't uncommon, like in the case of Sandra Hemme, who spent 43 years in a Missouri prison for a murder she didn't commit.
She was interrogated a dozen times over a 10-day period, and finally she gives them a confession they think they can use.
What Hemme's exoneration means for future cases. That's coming up after this news on The Gateway. A Missouri House committee meeting went late into the night yesterday to hear legislation seeking to make restrictions against transgender youth and athletes permanent. As St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Kellogg reports, the legislation in question is reworking existing law.
Back in 2023, state lawmakers barred transgender youth in Missouri from accessing gender-affirming health care. They also banned transgender athletes from playing on teams that align with their gender identity. Now, lawmakers are seeking to remove the expiration date that would have this law end in August 2027. Representative Emily Weber, a Kansas City Democrat, said it was insulting for some of the sponsors to describe their bills removing the sunset on the healthcare ban as, quote, simple.
It is a slap in the face. Because look at the amount of people that came here to testify against this legislation.
While 6 people spoke in favor of the bill, over 50 spoke against it. In Jefferson City, I'm Sarah Kellogg, St. Louis Public Radio.
The Respect Voters Coalition hopes to pass a new constitutional amendment that would ban Missouri politicians from changing the way state ballot measures are approved. Last year, the process was used to pass measures including Amendment 3, which overturned Missouri's total abortion ban. In recent years, Republican lawmakers have attempted to raise the percentage of approval a proposed constitutional amendment needs in order to pass. Currently, only a simple majority is required. Benjamin Singer, CEO of Show Me Integrity, spoke at a press conference Monday for the group.
Anything that allows politicians to interfere with the will of the people is something that we oppose vociferously.
The group is planning to hold a series of town halls across the state to gather input on the proposed amendment. Organizations that run after-school programs throughout Illinois are calling on state officials to release $50 million that lawmakers included in this year's budget to fund those programs. Advocates for the program say more than 27,000 students have lost access to after-school programming this year, and more than 2,000 staffers have lost their jobs because the funds have not been distributed. Capital News Illinois reports lawmakers provided funding for the programs to make up for the loss of federal funding that resulted from an accounting error at the Illinois State Board of Education. Officials at the state board say they need more guidance from the General Assembly before they can release the funds. Advocates for the program say the programs in question mainly serve black and brown students in underserved communities. A new federal funding pause has left a St. Louis area school district on the hook for electric school buses and chargers. St. Louis Public Radio's Kate Grumke reports.
The Environmental Protection Agency promised the Rittner School District $9.5 million for electric buses. But that federal funding is now suspended. Yesterday, the district received an invoice for more than $800,000 for bus chargers. Rittner Superintendent Chris Kilbride says they don't have the money for it.
We all entered into this contract in good faith, and we're expecting that it would be followed through with. Our hope is that that's the case, but we're committed to not spending local dollars to make this happen.
The EPA says funding is on pause because of a Trump executive order. I'm Kate Grumke, St. Louis Public Radio.
Monday's unusual heat broke a weather record in St. Louis. The high was 76 degrees. That broke an 1890 record by one thermometer notch. Local climate scientists say warmer winters are one way climate change is already affecting the St. Louis region. St. Louis is experiencing some of the largest departures from normal temperatures during the coolest months of the year. A bridge in South St. Louis County will need to be fully closed for a couple of months. St. Louis County's Department of Transportation and Public Works announced the closure of the Bayless Avenue Bridge starting yesterday. The bridge in Lima had been under construction to rebuild it since last fall. Initially, the county's transportation department left half the bridge open, but driving conditions had gotten unsafe because the surface significantly deteriorated in the last couple of weeks. The county expects the new bridge to be finished by the summer. Approximately 15,000 drivers use the bridge just east of Interstate 55 each weekday. To see a map of the detour, look for this story on our website, stlpr.org. A Webster University professor is teaming with the Regional Arts Commission to study the opportunities and challenges faced by local Black artists and performers. As St. Louis Public Radio's Jeremy Goodwin reports, researchers hope to find insights that will boost the local arts economy.
Webster University professor J.B. Kwan says Black artists and other creatives are more likely to self-produce their work and see themselves as entrepreneurs, but this could be because they have less access to institutional funding and performance space. Kwan says a clearer understanding of the landscape could boost the whole sector.
How can we contribute to building an infrastructure that can enliven the region, right? In many ways, maybe even to rehabilitate the reputation of the city, for example.
Researchers are counting on a $45,000 grant promised in November by the National Endowment for the Arts. If the White House cancels that grant, Kwan says he's not sure where to find alternate funding. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, St. Louis Public Radio.
Sandra Hemme is the Missouri woman who spent 43 years in prison for a murder she did not commit. She's now been home for 6 months. One key detail in her exoneration was her false confession. Hemme was heavily sedated during multiple interrogations by St. Joseph police. Reporter Sam Zeff checked in with her attorney, Sean O'Brien, to talk about how that detail sets the stage for future exoneration cases.
Let's start with you telling me how Sandy Hemme's doing now that she's home.
Well, she's happy to be home, and she loves her sister and her brother-in-law where she's living, and they love her very much, and that is really a wonderful relationship. You know, they're really getting acquainted with one another for the first time.
I want to talk about the Court of Appeals case. What does that mean to confessions for police and for prosecutors?
You know, it's a very detailed opinion, 75 pages long, and some of it is legal analysis, but a lot of it is what is wrong with this confession. And so it does, I think, or should, put new teeth in some of those 1940s and 50s and 60s U.S. Supreme Court decisions that distrust confessions where there are vulnerable subjects and persistent police questioning. This confession should have been suppressed 40 years ago. The other aspect of it, though, is that it shows us how to analyze as a piece of evidence a confession based on risk factors that it might be false. So they acknowledge that there were things out in the real world that were totally inconsistent with Sandy's confession. One is contamination. The confession has evidence that it was contaminated by outside sources, mainly the news, because this was such a high-profile case. So the prosecutor in the case argued that Sandy's confession had to be true because she described the flowered bedspread on the victim's bed. But in the very first story about the case, the victim's bedroom, the crime scene, was front page photograph under a banner headline about the case. So if you started learning about the case, the first thing you see is a flowered bedspread. I mean, there are times when the interrogators describe her as breaking down into tears when she gets confronted with parts of her statement that could not possibly be true. And this is a poor woman who is just trying to help the police and ends up inculpating herself in a crime that she had no idea about.
the idea that confessions are bulletproof, that they're the gold standard. We're learning that that's not the case. And there's now a growing, I'm hearing you say, body of case law that aids in encountering that.
There is a good body of case law, and there's a huge body of science that is questioning it. Well, one of the things that is fascinating is I read a biography of Thurgood Marshall called Devil in the Grove. And in the early days, the NAACP didn't like the fact that he was getting into these notorious crimes in the South. And so they told him, we only want you to work on cases where the defendant is innocent. And one of his colleagues asked, how are you going to know the defendant's innocent if it's pretrial in a case that you haven't even investigated yet? And Thurgood Marshall said, it's easy. I'll just pick the ones where they confess. And then when they couldn't beat confessions out of people anymore, they started sweating confessions out of people, holding them for as long as a week and interrogating them daily until they finally confessed. And that's effectively what they did to Sandy. She was interrogated a dozen times over a 10-day period. And finally, she gives them a confession they think they can use. But they had to work on her and work on her and work on her to get those details out.
That was attorney Sean O'Brien, who worked to exonerate Sandra Hemme. He spoke with reporter Sam Zeff at partner station KCUR in Kansas City. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.